You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Glad to have you along as we talk today about regional words and phrases and take a look at the Dictionary of American Regional English. William Sapphire put it this way in the New York Times. He said this, "The Dictionary of American Regional English, repository of the most delicious dialect sources and the most colorful evidence of the Americanization of the English language, has now covered letters P to SK, and this is the penultimate volume in the set that no library can afford to absquatulate." Absquatulate, that's the word.
Yes.
Joan Hall, senior scientist at the UW-Madison, chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, Volume 4, published by Belknap, is our guest. Volume 5 will be coming up down the road, but we're pleased to talk with her about that Volume 5, a little about Volume 4, and certainly take your questions about concerns that you may have or questions you may have about regional words or phrases. And we always have a great time when she's with us. And I think today will be no exception. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Absquatulate. You know, I said that a few times before going on the air, and I still messed it up. It's A-B-S-Q-U-A-T-U-L-A-T-E.
Yeah, great word, isn't it?
It is a wonderful word. And absquatulate means...
Well, in this, in Sapphire's sense, it means it can't be dismissed, it can't be sent away. But it also means to leave hastily or depart in a hurry. So if you were running from the law, for instance, you would absquatulate.
Well?
This is a 19th century word mostly, when people like to play around with fake Latinisms. So it's kind of a fun thing, but you wouldn't hear it much today.
You know, many people are familiar with the Dictionary of American Regional English, but many people aren't. And I think it's always worth repeating a little of the history of this and why we have this put together.
Yeah, well, this was actually thought of way back in 1889 when the American Dialect Society was founded. And the idea was that we would do a dictionary of American dialects that would complement what was being done in English with the English Dialect Dictionary. Of course, this country is so much larger than England, it took a very long time. And people collected word lists for many years and published them in the Society's journal. But it wasn't until the late 40s and early 50s when Fred Cassidy here at the UW decided we really need to get going on this. So he did a pilot study here in Wisconsin where he talked to people in 50 communities across the state and tested out the questionnaire that he would later use in the whole country. And then in the early 60s, he got started. And between 1965 and 70, about 80 field workers went around to 1,002 communities across the country and found people who had lived there all their lives and asked them to answer the questions in a huge questionnaire. This had questions about weather, time, money, plants and animals and food and clothing and farming and honesty and illness and health and disease, you name it. There were about 1,800 questions.
And then those questions became the sort of the result of those questions then was the first dictionary of American Regional English?
Yes. And the unique thing about this dictionary is that based on those responses from the 1,002 communities, we can create maps of the U.S. that show precisely where any given word was used. So we call up these maps, and if the dots tend to cluster, then we know we have something that we're interested in.
Well, I tell you what, lots of people online to visit with you, and there are so many great words to talk about. But Jim in Baraboo has been waiting a while. Jim, hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call here. I recently read about some cheerleaders in Dallas, in a Dallas suburb, who scandalized their elders with raunchy behavior and drinking, and it was a big scandal. And in defending these girls, one of their mothers said, well, they didn't kill Kennedy. And I wondered if this is a regionalism in Dallas where Kennedy was killed.
Wow.
Goodness, I don't know. I think she was being a little extreme, don't you?
Yeah.
Quite a difference between using inappropriate language and doing that. I haven't heard that phrase before, so I don't know whether it's regional. It certainly packs a wallop.
It sure does that. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Yeah, that one, boy. And that was used by the mother.
Yeah.
So sometimes you wonder where children learn things. maybe a lot of times it comes from mom or dad. Daniel in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. We have an expression in northern Wisconsin and Minnesota from our collective Norwegian heritage, which I believe is highly regional. I asked a Norwegian who was very fluent in English what it meant. He seemed stumped by the question and said, "Can you use it in a sentence?" I said, "Yes, and did." He replied, "Yes, it means many things. The expression is ufta."
Ufta.
Ufta, yes.
I've used that myself a time or two.
Yes, well, that certainly will go in Volume 5, and there will be, as you say, a very nice regional label saying that it's most common in Minnesota and Wisconsin, probably also in other places where Norwegians settled, such as North Dakota. It certainly is an expressive phrase, and it's very difficult to pin down exactly. It's the kind of thing you can use to express amazement, mm-hmm. or frustration or excitement, kind of an all-purpose expression.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's more than one. I mean, you could use it in place of holy cow.
Ufta. Yes. I think it's a great phrase.
Thanks, Dan. Jim and Hudson, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
I'm always interested in words and language, and a friend of mine and I were talking the other day about food. If you take ground beef and you fry it up with some onions and then put some tomato sauce or barbecue sauce in it, I was brought up calling that sloppy joes. Other places they call it barbecued beef on a bun. I went to a horse show near Appleton, Wisconsin, and they were selling what they called Spanish hamburger, which was the same thing. And this person I was talking to was from a little town in South Dakota, and they call it loose meat over there, which is the least marketable of the names, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yes, we have an entry for loose meat, and you're right. It does come from that part of the country. But I think that this was one that was popularized by a television show. Was it?
Oh.
Roseanne? I'm not sure which one it was, but yes, it had a brief vogue where everybody seemed to know what it meant. There's another really interesting expression for that kind of sloppy joe kind of mixture. In Iowa, it's called a tavern.
Hmm.
It's a nice regionalism in a very, very tight area.
It's called a tavern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And where does sloppy joe come? I mean, Sloppy Joes, we use that all the time here.
Yeah, I don't think people really know the etymology of it. And the Sloppy Joe that we know, the ground beef with the tomato sauce, is fairly widespread. But there's another sense of Sloppy Joe that seems to be chiefly in New Jersey. And there, a Sloppy Joe means something much more like a sandwich with sliced meat and tomatoes and lettuce and so far.
Oh, so you get a real surprise if you're from Wisconsin and order a sloppy joe out there.
You do indeed. The same way you get a surprise if you go to Boston and order a milkshake, because if you do that, all you'll get is a glass of flavored milk. If you want what we know as a milkshake, you have to call it a frap.
A frap.
And if you go to Rhode Island, you have to call it a cabinet. And years ago, anyway, if you went to Maine, you had to call it a velvet. So that's a great example of the way one particular item can have lots of different regional words.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jim.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
And bye-bye. Appreciate the call. And Gordy in Mosinee, I believe, is next. Gordy, hi to you.
Hi. I was just going to tell you one that I think is a Wisconsin-only regional expression. Almost anywhere else in the country where somebody is getting carpenters are talking amongst themselves and talking about somebody being too particular about their carpentry, one of them will say something like, "Well, we're not building a church." But here in Wisconsin, they say, "Well, we're not building a bar."
That's good. I don't think I've heard that.
I like that one,
Another
Gordy.
One is can't see it from the road, but I think that's Georgia.
Uh-huh.
Can't see it from
so,
the road.
So good enough for government work.
There you go.
Thanks, Gordy. That's a good one. Joan Hall, senior scientist at the UW-Madison and chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, with us today talking about regional words and phrases. It's great fun talking with her, and certainly feel free to join in yourself if you have a question. We'd love to hear from you. I mentioned that Volume 5, it's out, Oasia, 2009?
We hope so.
Mm-hmm. Hope to get it out in 2009. Must take a huge amount. I mean, these volumes are large.
Yes. The last volume was, I think, 1,040 pages.
Yeah.
And each one of those words gets worked on many, many times and read by a number of people, because we all have different experiences, and we can say, well, that sounds like a good definition, but from my experience, I think we ought to change it in this way. And also, we've discovered in the last couple of years that there are so many wonderful internet resources that it's taking us longer than we'd like to do the adequate resource. We've found that some digital libraries allow us to antedate the materials that we had by 100 years, 150 years.
Oh, wow.
And others allow us to get much more contemporary information than we had otherwise. So we can't afford not to do this research.
Roger in Fitchburg, it's your turn.
54 years ago, before he died, my father often used the expression when talking to his sons, "What in Sam Hill's the matter with you?" Was that widely used, or was that just his own? Have you heard that one? Do you know who Sam Hill was?
Oh, Sam Hill. I've heard that. I heard that one. I think my dad used that one on me.
Yeah, that's been around for a long time, and it's very widespread, which is why I don't believe we included it in Volume 4. But I'm feeling on the spot here. I can't remember who Sam Hill was. If anybody knows.
Maybe somebody will stay listening, Roger. Somebody might know and call in, and we'll find out. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, well, that brings back a memory. I remember my dad using that on me once or twice. John in Green Bay, it is your turn. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was originally born and raised in the southern part of the state down in Milwaukee, and I recently married my wife from, she's originally from Manitowoc. And it kind of surprised me, because one night we were having dinner and her mom came in the living room and said, "We're having hot tamale." So I'm like, "Okay, hot tamale, cool. We're having Mexican food." And we sat down to the dinner table and it was just simply Sloppy Joe's, which we called Sloppy Joe's down in Milwaukee,
right.
growing up, but in the Manitowoc Two Rivers area, I find out that they call it hot tamale.
Well, that's very interesting. I'm trying to check very quickly here to see whether we included that, and I don't believe we did, so I'll make a note of that.
Another thing, too, is boiled dinner.
Oh, yes. Boiled dinner. Do you know that from New England?
I had never heard of it before. And that was another thing that we had as one of our meals, was a boiled dinner. And I was like, okay, what's boiled dinner?
And was it a boiled dinner? Was it cabbage and potatoes and whatever, all boiled and together? Or what is
yep.
it?
Yep. Yep. It was country-style spare ribs and cabbage and potatoes and carrots and...
Yeah, it can be any dish of meat and vegetables that are boiled and simmered together. It's chiefly a New England term, but it looks as though it has moved west.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, John.
Sure. Have a good day.
And we'll see about that hot tamale. Maybe somebody else knows about that particular word for Sloppy Joe. Somebody else might. Mike in Green Bay, your turn. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I'm calling about, I'm showing how I'm dating myself. This goes back to when I moved from out east in the New Jersey area to Minnesota back in 1961. As a child who had been an entrepreneur's paper route, I had lost that money and was back to living on an allowance. And I went up to a soda fountain near my house in Minnesota and asked for a chocolate soda. And instead of the 5-cent drink that I would normally get, it cost me a quarter because it had ice cream in it. That happened a couple of times until I finally said, I want a chocolate soda, but not without the ice cream. And she says, the soda jerk said, no, you want a chocolate phosphate.
Uh-huh.
And that's a term that Minnesota, I know, used phosphate for the chocolate soda. Of course, that, we're dating ourselves because even soda fountains are antiques at this point as well.
Yeah.
Also, the other one that I thought of while I was on hold was we called the thing that you get water from at the school a water font out east, and then when I moved to Minnesota, they called them bubblers.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting that the bubbler was used in Minnesota because we Wisconsinites like to take pride in, in using that pretty exclusively. And in Wisconsin, it turns out that the area where people use bubbler matches pretty carefully the marketing area of the Kohler Company as of about 1918.
And I remember seeing the old bubblers, that the old drinking fountains where, I mean, it was the water kind of came out in the middle of this pan area, and it bubbled up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you've seen them, but the Wisconsin Historical Society has come out with a T-shirt now that has a picture of one of those on the front saying, it's a bubbler. And then on the back, it says, fountains are for throwing coins into.
I'll have to get one of those. That's great. Thanks, Mike. Thanks a lot for calling. Joan Hall, our guest today, senior scientist, at the UW-Madison, chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. I'm Larry Mueller. Steve Williams, our on-air producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Finding out all kinds of neat things today as we visit with Joan Hall, chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, Larry Mueller here. And lots of people have questions and comments about words and phrases. Let's go to Josh in Hayward next. Josh, hello to you.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
I just finished my sloppy joe for lunch.
Okay.
And, but I wanted to make a comment. Back in my truck driving days, we were talking about soda or pop or Coca-Cola. If you get in the South and ask for a Coca-Cola, it could mean any kind of beverage, you know, a soda. And in some areas, if you ask for a Coke, you're liable to get a bottle with peanuts in it. So they'll give you a bottle of Coke with peanuts in it and put them in there without asking you.
Oh, that's because interesting.
Because they assume that's what you want. In Tennessee and areas like that, they all drink their Coca-Cola out of a bottle of peanuts. And I've heard it, you know, across the country, soda, they don't know what you're talking about, or you say pop, and they look at you funny. It's a beverage with a lot of names.
That's true. That's one of the perennial favorites. In Boston, it used to be that you called it tonic, and in South Carolina, you'd call it dope. And as you say, in many parts of the South, Coca-Cola has become generic, or particularly Coke. So if you say, yeah, I'd like a Coke, they'll say, oh, what kind, orange? And pop and soda are both very widespread. It used to be that pop tended to be more a westerly term and into the Midwest, while soda was more common in the East. But soda is certainly encroaching on our territory. I know that my son grew up saying soda here in Madison. So it has come at least this far west.
I was thinking back to my undergraduate days of taking a class in marketing class from Bill Strang in the School of Business. And Bill talked about this business with Coca-Cola, that people would always say Coca-Cola. And when Pepsi-Cola, one of its big advertising campaigns was, say Pepsi, please. I don't know if you remember that or not, but that was really an attempt to overcome the business of people saying, if you wanted a cola drink, you'd say, just give me a Coke. They would say their ad would say, say Pepsi, please.
They're very careful about their trademarks.
Oh, yeah. Josh, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Larry in Whitehall, it's your turn now. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Thanks. This is a fun show. When I moved to Western Wisconsin 33 years ago from Illinois, I had to learn a new vocabulary. And a lot of this show has been about food and something around the table. And when I went into the restaurant and heard ufta for the first time, I guess I probably said, "Pardon me," and there are two other words. Or phrases. One is a horse apiece. I don't know if that's widespread across Wisconsin.
It's pretty much Western Wisconsin.
It is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it? Yeah. And I learned by keeping my mouth shut that it means six of one, half dozen.
Yeah.
Know?
Right.
And the other word came from Eastern Wisconsin, and we were having a dinner someplace, and someone looked in the pan of roast beef and said, "All that's left are schmibbies."
Oh,
and so,
yeah.
Have you ever heard of schmibbies, meaning the little pieces of meat that are left over when most of the entree is gone?
Well, I think we're going to have an entry for snibbies in that sense, just little bits of things.
So snibbies, S-N-I-B-B.
And yours was smibbies?
Well, I just heard it the one time, and years ago, and I don't remember.
It might have been you heard snibbies then.
It probably was.
Yeah, and a related word is sniblets, so little bits and fragments of things.
I'm enjoying this. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Larry. Carolyn and Madison, your turn. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi there. I spent a summer in Germany, and I worked at an American Girl Scout camp, and we had staff from all over the U.S., and we also had a woman from Denmark and one from Holland and two from England. And the woman from Denmark would say to us, "You're all from the same place. Why don't you know what each other is talking about?" And we tried to explain that, you know, how far apart we lived and how different things were. So it was always interesting having a conversation, especially when we talked about food. And, you know, a lot of us had been in Scouts for a long time and say, "Well, you know, we're going to have this." And somebody said, "No, no, I mean this and this, not that." And so it was always this long conversations about what exactly we were talking about, you know, and the woman from Denmark, especially, she would ask us, "Now, what does that word mean?" You know, so it was always fun to just try to figure everything out.
Yeah, but you could put quite a few Denmarks in the U.S.
Yes, I did have one question. I am originally from Central Illinois, and I worked with a doctor that was from Chicago area, and we both say tad. I'll just have a tad of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And nobody else in the office said it, and I was wondering if that's like an Illinois thing or...
No, it's pretty widespread.
Yeah,
Yeah, just a tad or a tad bit of something.
Yeah, because it always looks as if we're odd, but I don't know.
You are not odd, Carolyn. Believe me. If you are odd, so am I, because I've used tad, too.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Chris in Upper Michigan, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today? Hope you're having a wonderful day down
there. We surely are. Thank you for calling.
Well, I grew up in the Gwin area, which is a heavy, old mining area. Polish, Swedes, Finns, and... One of the things that I always see, and I traveled around the country, a lot of people call it a sauna, S-A-U-N-A.
Yes.
But the true Finns and the Swedes will call it a sauna.
Mm-hmm. Sauna. Mm-hmm.
And these are people that are actually from the old home country who are first generation here in the United States.
Sauna.
It's sauna.
Uh-huh.
And it's still spelled the same way.
Yeah, I think most Americans simply look at it and see the AU combination and treat it as if it were an English word, and so they call it sauna, as they would say haunted or something like that.
Exactly, but you know what the Finns and the Swedes say? A sauna.
Uh-huh.
A sauna is one of them electric things. Saunas with a wood stove and rocks.
I see. Let's be precise here.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for calling. Sauna or sauna? You say sauna, I say sauna. Let's go to Todd and Madison. Hi, Todd.
Yes, good morning, Larry. I hope everything's going well.
Great
discussion. I had a friend of mine, just an anecdote, from Virginia, Minnesota, that always said sauna as well. So, it's pretty prevalent. But I was calling about the Sloppy Joes. My wife is from eastern South Dakota, and they always call Sloppy Joe's Taverns.
Right,
Is that a known entity?
Yes, it is. We'll have an entry for it in the coming volume. And it is, as you say, very regional in a small part of Iowa.
Hmm. And yeah. This happens to be in South Dakota as well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's in South Dakota. But
right.
I had another question. I have an aunt that always refers to pants as britches. Where is what's the origin of that?
That's an old one.
It comes from the spelling breeches, B-R-E-E-C-H-E-S, very old word. And it's just often pronounced britches.
Hmm. Okay. And what is it? Is an English term or?
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. Well, thanks so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. And Holly in Fitchburg, we turn to you. Good morning, Holly.
Good morning. I just had a quick question here. I wanted to know how long a word has to be around before it's put into this dictionary. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it a year or 5 years?
Well, our dictionary is different from contemporary dictionaries, which care about how long a word has been around. In our dictionary, we're interested particularly in whether we can say that the word is restricted to a particular part of the country or to a particular group of people. But for contemporary dictionaries, there has to be enough evidence that this is not just a passing thing. So you would wait at least a year, probably more, but you look at the number of citations you find, and if it turns out that everyone, quote, is using it, then it's something that they certainly need to consider seriously.
Okay, so it's more of a geographic than a temporal standard, really.
For our dictionary, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And so some terms that are generally used, and a few have come up today, wouldn't find their way into the Dictionary of American Regional Language.
That's right. Mm-hmm. If it can be shown to be in part of the country, whether that part is a very small part or most of the country, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter, as long as it's not used everywhere. Or if we can say that this word is used particularly by a group of people, such as Pennsylvania Germans or any people of German heritage or African Americans or women or older people as opposed to younger people. Those are all criteria for us for entry.
All right. Anne in Sussex, I believe it is your turn. Oops, hold on a second, Anne. We will get you back here. There we go. Anne, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to add something regarding the issue regarding soft drinks. And I'm originally from Northern California, and I was teaching out here in Waukesha County, and the student requested a white soda, and I had no idea what he meant. And they had to explain it to me because I don't understand, you know, I didn't understand because it's clear it's not white. So I was wondering if you knew where that came from.
Well, I don't know exactly where it came from, but I do believe that we'll have an entry for it in the next volume because I've seen citations for it. My recollection of this is that it's chiefly northeast, like in New York City, but I'd have to check on that. I'm glad to hear that you heard it here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I also just want to add one more thing is my parents are German immigrants, and so we grew up speaking German, and all my life I always answered ja for yes. Mm-hmm. And I always made fun of until I came to Wisconsin. No one hears the difference anymore.
You're right about that, Ed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. That's a good one. Yep. Well, let's go to Ben in La Crosse. Hi, Ben.
Good morning to you both.
Morning.
Morning.
I am calling in regards. Well, I grew up in South Central Minnesota and transferred here, and my wife grew up in South Central Wisconsin. And it is about an old children's game that pretty much I think everybody has played, you know, duck, duck, gray duck, or I guess as they say it in Wisconsin, and my wife thinks I'm crazy that I call it duck, duck, gray duck, she is duck, duck, goose.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering if it's different throughout the country.
Well, there are numerous terms for it, but the thing that's been particularly interesting to us is that, just as you say, Minnesota hangs on tightly to that duck, duck, gray duck.
Well, that's the way it should be played.
Where other people in the Midwest who play the game, as you say, call it duck, duck, goose. So that's a nice, strong regionalism that still persists.
What kind of game is it, by the way?
Basically, kids sit in a circle, and the person starts off who is, I guess, it, and walks around the circle and will continually say duck, duck, and tap people on the head, and then eventually they'll say gray duck, and tap that person on the head, and they have to chase the person around the circle. And if you make it down to their spot in time, then you get to sit there, and you're not it anymore.
Uh-huh. Well, I bet I wasn't the only one. I kind of remember that. I don't remember if it, I don't remember the, it being called Duck Duck Gray Duck or Duck Duck Goose, but we played that when I was a little kid. Thanks a lot, Ben. Appreciate it. Victoria in Dodgeville. Hello to you.
Hello, Duck Duck Gray Duck. I remember someone saying that once we were playing, and nobody moved because we had no idea what the person was trying to do. Is this a new version? My word is shonk, S-H-O-N-K, kind of a local southwestern Wisconsin term, and wondering if it is from anywhere else. We know it to mean age, almost often a male, mm-hmm. most often unmarried, not always, in either case, someone who is unemployed and either has a spouse or a significant other that is supporting them. And they're very content in their position. Idlers.
A male idler.
Yeah, and I know a lot of shonks. Hello to you out there who are probably hearing me. And I say that with kindness. But is that a word that is elsewhere?
Well, we apparently didn't find it, at least not in enough examples to include it in Volume 4.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds a little bit slangy to me, so it might be in some of the slang dictionaries.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be worth a look.
Yeah, well, there are a fair amount of shonks in our area, so I'd be happy to know on future volumes if that comes up again. And if it spreads, I think it spread to Madison. So onwards.
All right.
Tell me again where you're from.
Dodgeville area. This is generally a Blue Mounds, Mount Horeb, southwestern Wisconsin term.
A shonk. Okay.
Yeah, it kind of became popular in the 80s, and we still use it. I don't know if it's an old, I mean, just passé, but I still use it a lot.
All right. More than you wish you had to, right?
Yeah, well, you know, it's an endearing term, actually.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
Well,
have a
good
day.
Just made a note of it.
Thank you very much for calling. Judy and Jewel Harbor, we'll go to you next. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Did you say Two Harbors? I actually am from Two Harbors, but I'm on the I-35. I hope it's not too distracting here. I wondered whether or not the author had heard of the Bill Bryson books that deal with the way English has evolved regionally.
Yes.
Because it's so entertaining. And, of course, the title's not coming to me now.
Oh, he has a couple of them.
You know, the author that wrote Walkin' Wild, there's one that comes to me. He's written two books, both on the English language and how it evolved. The word that I wanted to bring up from northern Minnesota, and we use it very often, is a Finnish word, and it's called sisu, S-I-S-U. Do you know of that word?
Sisu or sisu?
No, sisu.
Oh, sisu.
Goodness, that doesn't sound familiar to me, but
what does it mean?
Relenting of determination.
Oh.
And in fact, there is a famous race in Brimson, Minnesota, called the Sisu. But it can be used in any context. That means determination to get through life's journeys, whatever they bring.
And it's S-I-S-U, correct?
No, F as in...
Oh, F as in friend?
No, S as in Sam.
Okay.
S-I-S-U.
S-I-S-U or F-U?
Both are S's.
Okay, both are S-U. Okay.
S-U.
All right.
Well, I've made a note of it. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And Scott in Port Washington. Hi to you. Scott, are you there?
Hi there.
Hi.
Port Washington.
Yes, hi.
Well, I have a comment. About the saying, holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
It was obviously, at least I remember it being made famous by Harry Carey from the Chicago Cubs.
Yes.
And when I was young, my mom would always tell me that the saying, holy cow, came from my great-grandmother's father, which would be great-great-grandfather, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And... apparently, and you guys can help me out if this is recognizable to you or not, but she said that one day one of my great-great-great-grandfather's cows got out of the farm and walked down into town. And back then, I guess, all the churches, the doors, they would keep them open. And
and the cow walked in the church.
The cow, yeah, the cow walked. You can probably see where this is going. The cow walked in the church, and the priest was in there, and he heard this strange noise. And he walked out, and he sees Mr. Hochman's cow drinking from the holy water. And he got upset, obviously, grabbed the cow by the bell or wherever, and dragged him back to Mr. Hochman's farm. And when he got back to the farm, Mr. Hochman greeted him, and through their conversation, he said, "Well, I didn't realize my cow was Catholic." And the story got around town. This is in Iron Mountain, Michigan, in the UP. And we were always told that that's where the saying came from.
Well, I think this is a wonderful example of what's called a folk etymology, where people make up a story to explain something that they don't know the origin of. And it's entirely possible that there could have been a similar incident, but I suspect it's probably not the origin of the phrase. It's a wonderful story.
It is a wonderful story. And that term goes back a long
time. Yes, I suspect longer than your great-grandfather.
Yeah, great-great-great-great-great grandfather. But it's a wonderful story. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Scott. And Leslie in Preston, Minnesota. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, guys. Boy, this is fun show. Your guest has such a nice voice. It's just a wonderful voice.
She does, doesn't she?
Thank you.
But anyway, I originally am from west of the cities and moved down near Iowa and experienced a lot of different sayings down here compared to where I grew up. But my mother-in-law, who's just notorious for all different sayings, would always, whenever my father-in-law put on a goofy-looking hat, which he loved, he wore all the time, she would say, "Oh, you can't wear that. You look just like a picayune." And I had never heard of that before. What's that mean?
Oh, well, picayune has a number of senses. One of them is a coin, an old-fashioned coin that was used in Louisiana. Something that's picayune is small or insignificant. But as for the noun use, I'm not sure. It seems to me it probably comes from this notion of lack of substance.
Mm-hmm.
And then one other thing, my father always used a lot of them, too, and he would say always 2 bits and 4 bits and talk like that.
Yeah,
yeah, that's very common, but as you say, a bit old-fashioned now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Leslie. Appreciate it. And Joan, thank you so much. What a wonderful 45 minutes. I loved the whole time, and I hope you'll come back and be with us soon.
Well, thank you. I always enjoy the wonderful questions.
Oh, and we'll look forward. Well, we've got volumes 1 through 4 of the Dictionary of American Regional English. 5 will come up probably around 2009. You have a website that people might be able to go to?
We certainly do, and we'd love it if people would visit. The easiest way to find it, because the URL is not very mnemonic, is to simply go to a search engine and type in Dictionary of American Regional English, and that will take you right there.
It'll pop right up. Joan, thanks a bunch. Appreciate it
very
much.
My pleasure.
Joan Hall, senior scientist at the UW-Madison, and she is also chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, Volume 4, published by Belknap Press. Always a pleasure to have her along, and we will have her back. I can guarantee you that. Coming up, we're going to take a look at antiques, we're going to look at appraisals, and even some information on auctions with our next guest, Shirley Bauman, auctioneer, certified appraiser for Madison, Wisconsin, and been on the program a few times in the past. Got some information on some decoys and some weather vanes that people had that made them an awful lot of money. And you may or may not have something like that stored away in your home. And you may be thinking about an auction. More, maybe you're thinking about just getting something appraised to find out what its value is. Shirley can help you, or at least help point you in the right direction. So looking forward to visiting with her next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.